evening is now our seventh part of Shaul's arc, but it really stands alone. So even if we've not been part of this, the Perek by Perek, this evening really stands by itself as a very difficult topic. Because we just finished Perek Tezvav of Sefer Shmuel Aleph, and in it there's this incumbent responsibility on Shaul HaMelech to destroy Amalek. He doesn't do so, and because he doesn't do so, there's this debt on his head which he loses his kingship for. Because of the and we talked about last time what the problems were with his miscalculations in this whole business. But let's analyze it by itself. Okay, so why is it so important to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to eradicate Amalek in the first place? That's the question we need to be asking ourselves. That's the backdrop to it. So just appreciate this is not a natural flow of parshanut, right? We know that's not what the parshanim are dealing with here, but that what we should deal with, because that really is that's the background of the scene if we're watching the play Lahavdil. So what's the background over here? What's the backdrop to this? So let's start at the very beginning. This is a very, very tough subject, and we are I wouldn't say skewed, but we are coloured by Western values, which makes it harder to even understand this. So we're going to have to try to open up this topic as best as we can from the eyes of centuries of study. So we're going to start off at the beginning. Here we go. The Torah talks about Amalek two times explicitly. The Torah explicitly talks about it two times. The first time is, we're called the action. The second time is the response to the action. So there's two events. The first time the action appears is in Parshas. Anybody familiar? Parshas Beshalach. So here, let's set the scene of what's going on. Bnei Yisrael just left Mitzrayim. They've had this 7-day incredible, run and pursuit, and they're really in a very difficult situation right now. They get through the Kriyas Yamsuf, and then they spend this time with a little bit of water problems, a little bit of food problems, and those are all resolved. And at this point in time, as everything seems to be going just swell, then in steps Amalek. And this is when we have the first encounter with Amalek. And we have this very strange battle which ensues, where Yahushua is leading the troops, he's the general, and Moshe, Aaron, and Hur are on the mountaintop, and Moshe's hands and the whole business. Whenever his hands are up, it's great, and when they're down, it's not great. And they succeed in weakening Amalek, not vanquishing, but weakening Amalek. And it's the end of the section which really is most fascinating to us, the last three psukim. So let's take a look. This is in Source 1 on page 13 in the continued booklet. So in Pasuk Yud Gimel, it describes how Yahushua weakened the Amalekites lefi charev. But then in Yud Dalet, here's what Hashem says in response to this whole action. Moshe Rabbeinu, write this down in a book. Now, the Torah is a book, right? So the Torah is doing this, but it's almost like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Mephoreshim understands, is writing NB in the column over here, right? And this part is very important for us to take note of. And tell Yahushua, that I'm going to wipe out Amalek from under the heavens. And he made a mizbeach, saying this is Hashem's miracle to me here. Because there is a hand on the case. What's a case? Anybody know? So it sounds very similar to a kisei. Like there's a hand. There's a hand on the kisei, on the throne of God, in his intergenerational war against Amalek. Okay, so this is the end of this description. Just so we can appreciate this ourselves, who are the antagonists in this description? Meaning, who is the war between in the way this is being described to us? Who is supposed to be fighting one another here? Okay, it's Hashem and Amalek. Isn't this interesting? It's almost like Hashem's personal vendetta, it sounds like, with Amalek. Who's going to wipe him out? He says, Mocha Emche, I, the Ribbono Shel Olam, am going to wipe out generation, because it's almost like they are clinging onto my throne, and they're a dent, they're a problem in the world that I created. And that's what it seems to describe. It's interesting, it isn't a responsibility yet of Israel, right, in the way this is described. We just have to sort of stop there for this moment and say, wow, it sounds like Hashem's got a debt to settle with Amalek. Obviously, something about Hashem's world or his operations have been affected, to whatever degree we can say that is, by Amalek's action. We have to kind of work out why it's so bad. Many nations attacked Israel. Why was this so bad? So if this is all we had, then we'd say, okay, great. So we're going to witness. We'll be the bystanders while God, you know, wages this monumental historic battle. But the Torah doesn't stop there. As we know, most familiar with, we read the second part of Amalek is actually to be found in the Maftir of Kisaitzeh. Okay, so the very, very end of the Torah, when you're not expecting, you're least expecting it, the Torah starts talking about Amalek once again. Now, just we often hear it because we hear it. Obviously, this is the Kriyas Torah for Parshat Zachar, of course. But this section of the Torah is the end of Kisaitzeh. Kisaitzeh is completely full of lots and different mitzvahs. Okay, so just to appreciate where what the predecessors are to this section, what's just immediately before this in this section of the Torah is the mitzvah of Yibum. And the mitzvah of having righteous or even measures. Like, so let's say you're doing business, you're selling flour, so you have cups. Your cup is, you know, your half a cup, three quarters cup, full cup. So the Torah says make sure that your cups aren't dented or, you know, or you don't soak them in salt so that they're a little smaller. You know, make sure that your measures, your stone measures are good. And then the Torah then jumps straight into this next section. So I think from a learning Tanakh perspective, we need to keep that in mind and sort of scratch our heads and say, is there any connection to that and Amalek? But here's what the Torah says in the next section. Here we are. This is in Source 3. So this is these psukim we're very familiar with, but it's worth reading them not as a laning listener, but as a mindful reader and learner this time. Okay, so here we go. The three psukim are very concise. It says, Zachor, you're meant to remember, and Zachor is a constant reminder. It means that you need to have it constantly on your mind. Eis asher oso l'cho Amalek, that which Amalek did to you, betzeh baderech betzeh Mitzrayim, when you were leaving Egypt. Asher korcho baderech, very hard word to translate. Any takers on that? What's korcho? Right? Okay, so there's really two words which we could really automatically derive of here. One is the word kar, cold. Although mikre, which is happenstance. So those are going to help us understand a little bit of what Amalek is doing. So they happened upon us, or they cooled us down on the road. And they attacked the hindmost, the tail of us. And you, in the meantime, were tired and weren't fearing God. And it will be, so when you're going to settle down, you get into the land, you sell it, you plant your vineyards, you get your king, everything's going to be great. Then timches zecher Amalek mitachas haShemayim lo tishkach, destroy, eradicate the memory of Amalek, and don't forget. So now, if we're to say, well, who does the Torah view as the protagonist or the antagonist of this over here? It's between who and who? It's between us and Amalek. Isn't it interesting that it's shifted now? And in fact, even the way that Hashem is describing it has shifted, is it's not what he did to me and my throne, it's what they did to you. Remember what they did to you. So that already we see a shift. There's obviously a dual hurt which Amalek imposed. One is on Israel, one is on God. We don't know if they're separate or they're actually the same thing over here. What is a little strange about this, there's always something which is like logically difficult to understand in this mitzvah. What is that? But no, let's forget morals for a second. What's logically difficult about this? About the way this is phrased? Something which bothered me for years. We'll see if we can get to it.
How do you zachor and simcha?
Good, right. So the problem is that the root zecher, which means memory, is used twice in this section. One is to remember what they did, and one is to eradicate their memory. So the problem is those are incongruent together. If you want to eradicate their memory, you know what you do? Is you write them out of the textbook, right? That's how propaganda works, right? The way what we do is we're going to reconstruct history, and Amalek, never heard of him, right? They're one of those ancient tribes you found, one of the Ugaritic tribes. No problem. That's the way you get rid of memory. But apparently the Torah doesn't want to do that. The Torah wants us to remember them, but to destroy them. So we have to try to work out how those two work with each other. Are we eradicating them, or are we not eradicating them? Are we remembering them, or are we not remembering them? There's a little bit of a tension even in this parasha itself. So in and of itself, it's difficult.
So once you destroy them, there is nobody to remember. They're gone.
Right. Unless it's hard to destroy them. Right. So Ellen, you're pushing in the right direction. So unless it's harder to destroy them, unless something about them remains. Right. Oh, then a transmission Esther a Mazel Tov. a Mazel Tov to Esther Baruch on the granddaughter, Mitzvah Hashem, TBN tomorrow morning. Be'ezos Hashem. It's wonderful. Mitzvah Hashem only continued Simchas. Yes?
So in the first, when it says that Hashem is raging this war with Amalek from generation to generation, but if you're having war with Hashem and once you're gone, how does it go over generations? Mm-hmm. Why didn't you just eradicate them?
You're right.
Sin. If they were bad,
you're 100% right. Which gets to what we have to ask ourselves: what they are. Meaning, what is it? What is it about them? You know, God could just go poof and they're gone, right? So apparently, there's something about them which needs to be here, but needs to be eradicated. Which is a really, really very important point to remember. So this is what we have. Now we can ask ourselves other questions as well. We can start getting into like the bigger questions. But the issue is like this: we need to remember that there are two types of questions. The questions are, this bothers me emotionally. And then there's another question is what does the Torah really want? Okay, now those are very different kinds of questions, because most of the time we're going to be learning through the Mepharshim, the earlier Mepharshim, the questions they're bothered with is not, oh my goodness, how could we be killing man, woman, and child? Their questions are going to be is, what's so bad with Amalek that they need to be killed more than other nations? So that's the type of question the Mepharshim are going to be dealing with. We, in later generations, are going to say, well, how is it congruent with the Torah's notion of mercy and care and value of life to be eradicating men, women, and children? But that's a different type of question, right? So we're going to see, what I think it's important to realize is that as we move our way through the Mepharshim, let's try to appreciate what the Mepharshim are saying and explain the Torah on its own grounds, and then ask the questions, well, how does the Torah explain itself on the, we'll call, global moral platform. Okay, those are two different things, and they might coincide when we try to answer this. But nonetheless, let's be aware that some of our questions and answers might not be in the same scope. So I don't think we're going to have enough time to do this properly tonight, because I don't want to push this. So what I'd like to do is let's start covering the Mepharshim's perspective today a little bit, and then next week we'll get into the more serious questions, which are like today is there room for hate? Is there room for revenge? Is it a Torah value? Those kind of things, which are more the trying questions, which the philosophers today are dealing with. Okay, so but let's start off with just the Mepharshim. Is this a mitzvah? And you say, do we count this as a mitzvah? And the answer is absolutely, positively yes. So this is one of the 613. In fact, there are three mitzvahs that the Sefer HaChinuch counts around here in this section. The Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch count this. Now the reason why this is not easy to find in all halacha books is a lot of halacha books only focus on the halacha which is, generally, applicable today. So, for instance, the Shulchan Aruch deals with things which are either business law, ritual law, marriage law, or one second, Choshe Mishpat, Yoredea, Orachayim, and Evan Ezer. So, anything which falls into the four main categories of Jewish life. But when it comes to when it comes to things which are not like building a Beis HaMikdash, establishing a king, Shemitah, things like that, which are not applicable as much today in a godless reality, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about as much. So you have to trace back to certain works like the Rambam, the Sefer HaChinuch, who are dealing in a holistic picture of the whole Torah, not just the things that are applicable today. Okay, so that's why we can't just simply open up a Shulchan Aruch and see all of these in the regular, how to put on, tefillin, how to daven, how to light candles on Erev Shabbos, and how to kill Amalek. It's not going to be in the same book, right? So that's why we have to go back to the Mepharshim, like the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch, who look at this more holistically, and the Mepharshim on the Torah itself. That's going to be our key. So Sefer HaChinuch, what he does is, some people attribute him as to Rav Aaron of Loniel, living in, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the late 1300s. And he wrote this book called Sefer HaChinuch, which was actually a book to his son, who was turning bar mitzvah, and he wanted to educate him as to what was important for him to know about mitzvahs. Halavai, at the age of, 12, 13, we should all know all this. And he basically just counts every mitzvah, and he has a very simple format, which is just so pedagogically you're helpful for anybody reading. He says, what is the mitzvah? What are the sharashim? What is it? Where does it come from? What does it mean? What are the dinim? And then who it applies to and where? Like, what are the parameters in terms of application? Every mitzvah does the same thing. And it's really, really, really an eye-opener in so many accounts. So here he says on the mitzvah, here this is in source 4, the Sefer HaChinuch says in mitzvah 603, right? So we're close to the end over here. He counts them sequentially from the beginning of the Torah. He says it's towards the end of the Torah, so that's why we're close to the 613th. He says, let's start the first paragraph. Mishar Shem Mitzvah, the roots of the Mitzvah, this is in the first the section. La Seis El Libeinu Shekol HaMetzer LiYisrael Sanui Lifnei Hashem Baruch Hu. We should know that if somebody hurts us, God Himself hates that entity. V'chi lefi ra'asai v'armas roiv nizkai tihye mapolasai v'ra'asai k'moy she'ata motzei ba'amolek. And to the degree of their evil is the degree, or their hurt, is the degree that Hashem hates them. That's what happens to Amalek. Kimi mibnei she'asa ra'a gadala Yisrael, she'hizchilu la'achzikom, tzivonu baruchu la'abed zichrom minei oretz l'sharesh acharav ad kala. Because they were the first nation to hurt us. Remember, we'd only become a nation, you know, a good 2 weeks earlier. It's the first time we became a nation. So because they were the first ones in to start trying to obliterate us, therefore Hashem has a real debt to settle with this nation. So what the Sefer HaChinuch is doing is he's saying, really, if you think about this for a moment, who are the antagonists in the way the Sefer HaChinuch is doing? What is he essentially saying to us? It's Amalek versus... It's really Amalek versus us, but because it's versus us, that's why Hashem got so upset, right? So he's putting together, essentially, Bashalach and Kiseitze, and he's telling us that Hashem really, really hates these people because of what they did to us. Now, this isn't fully maspik, right? This isn't fully enough to understand it because, okay, it is the first, that is important, but it feels like there's a little more we need, right? So in the next mitzvah, actually, when describing this mitzvah, he says, when describing the mitzvah to eradicate them, listen to how he describes this lahalocha. If you were to ask him, living in the 1300s, is there a mitzvah to obliterate Amalek? What would you say? Meaning to say, if you were interviewed and you were strolling down the streets in northern Spain at the time, and somebody said, is there a mitzvah? If you were to meet a license-carrying Amalek resident, would there be a mitzvah to eradicate them? What would you say? 1300s? So his answer is yes. His answer is yes, and this is not biblical. It's not in the biblical times. We're talking about now, you know, modern eras, even medieval times. He says in the next paragraph, Shinistavino limchois zara shel Amalek al abed zikra min ha'olam. We need to eradicate them. Zochor nekeva gadol v'katan. Everyone, man, woman, child. Val ze ne'emar timchei zikra Amalek shebichlal zochor hu hakol. Even though the language is in masculine, it refers to everybody because that's just the tense of the language. V'kvar to'a b'nikoteva zu gadol hadar, and he talks about how Yoav made a mistake. And he interpreted it as Zecher Amalek as the males, and that's why he only killed the males at one certain stage in history. Jumping down two little paragraphs to the one that starts with Zeus, he says, Zeus mina mitzvos hamutolos al tzibor kulon. Who is responsible for this? The whole community. All of Israel has to do this. The Ke'inyan she'amru zichron en v'racha, shalosh mitzvos nistavud Yisrael b'knesetos on the aretz, limchoy lemanos lahem melech, v'limnoz lahem beis abechira, v'lahachris zarosh Amalek. So it is really a national mitzvah, which means, therefore, if you're living in northern France right now, you might say, in northern Spain, you would say, well, we don't have a king, we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, so maybe we shouldn't have the national mitzvah of Amalek as well. But, he adds, uve'emes, truthfully, ki gam al kol yachid mi Yisrael ha-zacharim, mutal ha-chiyuv lahar gam ula abdom min ha-olam. Im yesh b'koach b'yodom b'chol makom v'chol zman. Im ula yimtza echa mikol zaram. He says, nonetheless, I still believe, even though it's a national mitzvah, it's still incumbent upon males to do this if they meet them. Now, I don't know if you've had any reportings recently. No, I haven't had any reportings about any particular Amalekites. Part of the reason why that is because there's a schism in history, which is that at the time that Sanherib from Assyria came, their military strategy was that the way you subjugate people is that you move them around. Because the problem is that these people you take over, they always fight back because they're nationalists, you know. They want their state, they want their thing. You know what we're going to do? We'll put them over there, and they're over them over there, and if we switch them all around, nobody's going to, you know, they'll have to sort of work, they'll spend all their time trying to enculturate themselves to the new place. They won't have time to be thinking about the place that they wanted and they dreamed of and so on. So that's what the Syrians did. And because of that, what the Gemara says is, Sancheri Bilbel Esa Umaisi, switched around a lot of people. It's very hard to trace lineage. So before anybody goes out there, just be aware of that. It's very difficult to apply this, but what is important for us to see is that Sefer HaChinuch understands this mitzvah very literally and very practically. Right? Meaning to say, without any apologetics over here, right? At this point in time, he is very clearly aware this is a mitzvah and it continues to be a mitzvah, even in his time, if you're able to ascertain who the people are. Right? So this is what he would say, which is, wow. So he hasn't, you know, he's tried to give an explanation, which is, why is it so bad? Why are they so bad? Because they were the first. Right? So that's his explanation. But I feel like there's a little more we can get to that, because it's more than just the first. It seems that Hashem is really going out of his way to talk about these people as bad. So we're going to try to delve a little deeper. So what we're going to do in the next few minutes, as we come to a close today, is I want to work with you three ideas. Okay, that's our goal for tonight, is three ideas as to why they are so different to everyone else. Okay, and then with that we'll stop. Number one. Idea number one is brought in the Maharal. The Maharal is a Pirush on Rashi, actually Rashi on Chumash, called the Gur Aryeh. And the Maharal says a very, very fascinating thing. He says a lot, so we're not going to read it all at all. But I want to just sort of put in an extra, he puts in an extra variable into the equation, which maps we didn't think about beforehand. Why are we so bound up with Amalek? So here's what he says. The Maharal says, Maharal of Prague, says in Source 5, this is the Maharal in Shmos, the end of B'Shalach. I'll explain to you what I think the matter is. Remember that Amalek is actually the grandson of Esav himself. Okay, so it's not just any nation, it's our brother nation. It says, which is not true about any of the other nations. The Moabites, the Midianites, all these other folks, it isn't as close to who we are as a nation that they're fighting about, with us about. The Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks, distant relatives, right? The other side of the family. But in this case, we know that we're almost connected at the hip with this nation. It's such a balance that when one goes up, the other one goes down, and vice versa. It's the seesaw reality of the Bnei Esav and the Bnei Yaakov. That's what's happening. How does he know that? Look what he references in parentheses. Rashi Bereshis Chav Hei. What's he referring to over there? How does he know that there's this seesaw effect? I mean, like, where did he pull this out of? Where in Bereshis are we talking about? Oh, yeah. Good. So let's go back into where it all originated from. In Parshas Toldos, where it's talking about the brachos and the stealing and Yaakov getting these brachos, it's actually even before then. It's when she's pregnant with the two of them, and she feels this terrible struggle inside of her, and she goes to shame to speak to Hashem, and she asks, "What is going on over here?" And she says, "Ulo om milo om miyamatz v'rav yavod sa'ir." There's going to be this power struggle, and v'rav yavod sa'ir, and there's going to be a prioritization. But what Rashi says over there is that when one is strong, the other one sinks, and vice versa. There's going to be this relationship where you cannot have these two powers coexisting at the same time. So the Maharal is saying, well, it finds its expression in the great-great-grandchildren, in Amalek and Israel. He says, they are, will mutually, exclusively successful. And that's why they can't succeed together. And that's why he quotes the Midrash Tanchuma, calls man Shezar Shal Esav Olam Ein Hashem Shalem Ve'en Hakisei Shalem. That's why that Hashem's name is not full in the world, and Hashem's throne is not full in the world as long as they're around. Shneimar Ki Yad Al Kis Ka Milchama La Hashem Amalek. That the word kis, case, which is really supposed to be kisei, it's missing the aleph, and the word Hashem Yud and the Nehei is missing the last two letters of its name, because as long as they're there, his representative on this planet, which is Israel, cannot have their ground to exist. So the Maharal is adding to us a new level of connection. It's not just that they were any nation who attacked us. They were our brother who attacked us. And the way it works is that the one is successful at the expense of the other. And so therefore there's a power game over here. And Hashem says, my representative on earth needs to be successful in order for my name to be full. And when they are not, and their foil is succeeding, they sink down. So this we're called a major power struggle over here. In fact, the Maharal goes on to say, and we're not going to read through this in total now because of time constraints, but it really, the Maharal actually starts talking about a notion of what's called shnios, seconds. And what it seems to be, what the Maharal seems to be saying, and this gets into very deep philosophical questions, is that when you see evil in the world, whether it be natural evil or human-created evil, you know, meaning whether it be a volcano erupting and, you know, destroying a Roman city, you know, when you see human evil, ISIS, you know, when you see different evils that arise in the world, you know, how does it work in a monotheistic religion? Because ultimately, if God is in control of everything, then that means to say there has to be a department which is answerable to him that's in charge of that, right? So, you know, like, there's only so far you can kick the can down the road and say, well, it was somebody else, right? In a monotheistic religion, there's a pyramid, and there's God is at the top of that pyramid. So how does that work? In polytheism, it's fine, right? Because you can always say it was the wind god, right? And he just doesn't behave well with the rest of them, right? So however it works, we can always have a way out. But when it comes to monotheism, there's a top to the pyramid, right? So this is the issue that everybody contends with. One of the notions over here is that when evil is allowed to wield its terrible head, it looks a little bit like there's another power in the world. It looks a little bit like there is another force besides for the force of God in the world. So what he is saying over here is not just that it's Esav and Yaakov, is that Yaakov represents what God's good is in this world, and somehow, some way, that this Esav expression is a shnius, is the second power which allows. And by the way, if you go back to all good old fashioned, you know, Avodah Zarah, you know, dualism was like, you know, very popular. Zoroastrians, the gods of light, the gods of darkness, the fire gods, right? The notion of two sets of powers is because of these issues. So he's saying that's why it's a zero-sum game, and our success is ultimately Hashem's success, because otherwise it looks like it is the power of terrible people in the world. So that's the Maharal. It's fascinating, really fascinating eye-opener that the Maharal is describing over here. Let's actually. I want to skip the number six, the Parag Yitzchak, for a second, just because it's a little involved. We need a little bit of thinking for this one. So maybe we'll start that with that next week, because there's a lot more to it in the short synopsis. But let's take a look at source six for a second, just in this relationship. The Malbim says that he has a very 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 long section. So let's not take that away. I just want to do the one line that he says at the end. He drops off this interesting line. He says, "V'nirmas she'inan bi'as Amalek ha'yobatana sabachora ba'meshe be'ashebo bein hayibum u'le'parshas bikurim shu'inyan abachora." He says, "Look, if you look at the fact that preceding it is yibum in Dvarim in Parakofei, and then you go into Parakovav the next parshas Kisava, talking about when you bring bikurim, there are all issues about legacy, continuing, who has the control over land and name." And so he says, wedged in between is Amalek, because Amalek isn't simply about, you know, land. It's not about a particular issue. It's really about a primordial challenge for power and who's going to be the child of legacy. And that's what the Malbim says, really in line with this Maharal as well. One last idea, and this is very, very, very powerful, this next section. This is remarkably powerful. The Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, of course, you know, is talking about this from a perspective. Now we're talking in 200 years ago in Germany, is talking about these same issues. And he says, the first thing he says is like, look, we got to see the immediately preceding parasha is about honesty. It's about, as we talked about just a second ago, is about keeping honest measures, about doing business honesty, hin tzedek, avnei tzedek, all the great things we need to be doing in life. He said, because, you know, ultimately, Hashem is expressed in the world when humans do the right thing. Right? When we're able to go against our natural, visceral temptations to stab people in the back in order to get more for ourselves, and we stop acting like animals, that is godly. That means to say that's where we express a non-instinctual, non-self-centered expression of what He is in this world. That's what our job is. Is every time we do that, and somebody says, "Wow, you know, I'm so impressed with what you just did," and you're representing Hashem as well. That's what it's all about. It's where the rubber meets the tar is out there in the world as we do business. So he says the following. He says, contradistinction, the very opposite of that, is Amalek, who represent everything that he is not. everything that he's not. Take a look at, let's see if we can find this over here. Yeah, on top of the top of page 60. He says, Acharei shehutal al Yisrael tafkid chavosa. After Israel is given their purpose, Harehu oile ato al eretz haTorah amanas lekayem shom es mitzvosel. There's now a responsibility to go into the land and fulfill its commandments. Now express it. Mishum kach haTorah chazeres umaskiru ala ato es hanigud hazeh le'etzem ha'usay. The Torah now talks about an entity in the world which is completely and utterly at odds with who Hashem is in the world. Leval yishkach oisay le'olam betziur behapratim shel ha'hafas amalek himavhira loy es hanigud hazeh le'yehudoy. He's now describing Amalek, who's the absolute opposite on the extreme of what it means to be kind, what it means to be sensitive, what it means to be honest. Ela sheshom ne'emar shamavak ima ekronoy shel Amalek ad le'ovdeinu ha'gomor hu'toichen kol ha'anogah ha'historis shel Hashem alei adamos. The war of God on this earth is fighting those powers that don't follow his system. He goes on to say, and again, I don't want to go through the whole thing. His point is the way he describes it in English. I didn't have a chance to put the English in over here, which is always very eloquent. He says that Amalek are the people who live by the sword. We're the people who live by the word. We came out of Egypt and we talked about values. We talked about God values. We talked about education. And along came a people by the sword who sought to eliminate the people of the word. But not only did they search to eliminate the people of the word, who did they prey upon? What does the Torah tell us? They preyed upon the Nechashalim. Says Rav Hirsch, God's expression in society is how we treat each other, and especially those who are less fortunate than ourselves. That's how we're judged. What, you know, we look at a community and say, is our community doing well? The answer is do we have things like a kulanu? Do we have hasks? Do we have systems in society which go out of their way? Do we treat people, you know, Jesse's involved in this all day long, people who are less fortunate psychologically, psychiatrically, people who are suffering, do we have systems for them? That's how society is judged. Not on all the achievements of society. What do we do about those who are Necher Shalim, Oyef V'Yogeya? And says Rav Hirsch, then you come to the opposite entity of what godliness is in this world. And those are people who will always pursue the weak. Those who will take advantage of the poor. Those who always cut a good deal at the expense of others. Folks, when you just see this, it's so shocking. These are just pictures from what's called, this is the propaganda program in Germany in 1941, the T4 program of the Nazis. That post on the left over there is a picture. It's of a man and a child who is mentally handicapped. And it says in German that this man cost the state 60,000 marks to support. Wouldn't your money be spent elsewhere? Better. There's other on the program at the bottom, posted about the living costs of healthy people and non-healthy people. In the bottom is this, that's a picture of one of the psychiatric hospitals and the inmates at the hospital, where they started instituting this program, what was called the euthanasia program, where they started eliminating not just Jews, not just gypsies, but people who were mentally unstable, people who had handicaps physically, people who weren't perfect enough for the Aryan society. There's pictures over here. These are all things where they talk about how much it costs to support such people. You see, what happens is that when you have such atrocious behavior that a human can perpetrate, you know what? Then you look at the world and you say, can this be godly? Is Hashem really here? That's what Rav Hirsch is saying. Is when you see people who are going to go after a nation, they're going to cut off the people at the back, the people who are struggling, the stragglers, the people who are protected in society. That's the greatest sign of God's, so to speak, absence, it looks like. Says Hashem, I'm waging a war for the people who are the people of the word, not the people of the sword, the people who are now able to treasure what matters to me most, who exemplify what I do, which is caring about those who are imperfect, because we're all imperfect. That's what's happening over here, Sejra Fish, which is very, very powerful over here. That's what pure evil is, and we've seen it, unfortunately. It's so real. They're not the first to do it, and they, unfortunately, will not be the last. They're types of people who seek to take advantage of the weak and the underprivileged. So what we're going to do is, what we've done this week, what we achieved is we opened up, we looked at the two parashios of Amalek. we try to see that halachically, actually, like the Sefer Chinuch takes it very seriously with the two tiers of understanding. One is the Maharal's understanding, which is that we're linked in terms of the power struggle of the legacy of who's going to be the child of essentially Hashem. And finally, the last idea, which is taking advantage of the week, which is Rav Hirsch's idea. Next week, we'll start the Rav Pachad Yitzchak, God willing, and then move into the more recent understandings of this episode. So thank you very, very much for joining us, and Mitzvah Hashem, we'll continue next week.